This show is brought to you by Commercial Creative Systems, supporting the color critical, deadline driven creative services sector. Modern communications agencies depend on reliable quality print solutions because they know the costs that come with getting it wrong. From quick fix to full studio workflow calibration, Creative Systems has a solution for you. Creative Systems' market-leading experience as the creative industry's most dynamic and knowledgeable systems integration specialist delivers best-in-class copying and printing systems, MPS, proofing, and cross-media applications. And all this quality comes with the highest level of service delivered by knowledgeable and experienced personnel. And if your company is mindful of its carbon footprint and wants to reduce the environmental impact of its decisions, then Creative Systems has your back. Being part of the commercial group means that social value and sustainability are at the heart of its business, and commercial is the recipient of the Queen's Award for Enterprise Sustainable Development category. So if you need a quality service backed by years of experience working with the UK's most agile marketing and comms agencies, then check out their website at creativesystems.co.uk or call them on 0208 758 7750.
What have I learned from this so far? At the beginning, it's quite personality-led, so some people are going to just pull everything and batten down the hatches. Other people are more bullish and want to trade through it. People with higher value products and services with longer buying cycles, those are less likely to be disrupted.
Hello again from the Fuel Podcast, brought to you by The Advertist, the new business development platform for marketing and communications agencies. In this episode, Alex Kirkpatrick gives us all a few pointers about how to save our businesses by applying some basic new business techniques and a large dose of common sense. Alex runs one of the UK's better known new business agencies, Insight. He's been around the block and down most of the alleys of the world of new business, so it's worth paying attention to his nuggets. Thankfully, Alex was, like us all, under a coronavirus house arrest, so it meant he was in one place for longer than 2 minutes. He's never not busy because he runs an international company, and I have the cheek to keep emailing him and asking him for favours. Tolerant as ever, Alex sat down with us to discuss techniques and skills we can all learn to help keep the wolf from the door and prevent us from suffering from new business paralysis. And if the sound on his end is exceptionally good, it's because he was under a duvet when he was recording it. So here's Alex Kirkpatrick, TOG rated 8.5. Welcome to week two of our series, Extreme Conditions for B2B Selling, starring today's guest, Mr. Alex Kirkpatrick, Managing Partner of Lead Generation and Growth Agency, Insight New Business. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, thanks for spending some time. It's good to actually finally grab some time because last time we spoke, I don't know whether you remember, but it was on a phone conference, on a three-way phone conference, and I think you were cycling through London at the time. I couldn't think of anything more hazardous.
It's a challenging day. I don't recommend bike-based conference calls, but they occasionally are required.
Fantastic. So anyway, into our chat, we're actually approaching the eye of the storm virus wise. London's on lockdown, I understand, and America is on dumb down as usual. But firstly, how is everyone in your life? Everyone okay?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, we've got a young son who's 15 okay. months.
Oh, fantastic.
So we're working in 3-hour shifts. Which is good. So there's a lot of negotiation, and I normally lose, which is what you want.
But that's just in your personal life.
Well, absolutely.
But now that we're all kind of working remotely, I mean, how are you managing? Because obviously you're kind of a sort of a people business, aren't you?
Yeah, I think that it's interesting. We're seeing some different responses from different clients. So we work with about 50 different businesses that range from global corporates to literally two-man firms.
Wow.
And it's not inevitable how people are reacting. So we've had, you know, $100 million capitalized corporates pull contracts, so immediately give notice, even though they're clearly well capitalized against our fees, which are, you know, minuscule by comparison.
Right.
And we've had two-man firms go, no, we're going to trade through this. We want to work with you creatively to lean into this. This is creating new needs. It's creating new context and circumstance, and we really believe we as a business want to trade through this. So I think it's as much personality led as anything else.
And do you think that maybe because they are, you know, these big businesses are so heavily capitalized that basically they can afford to be cautious, whereas sort of smaller businesses tend to think, well, nothing to lose, we've got to really just go for it now and see what we can do?
It's an interesting question. I think the larger the organization, the more they're making balance sheet type decision making. So it's behind it. I mean, I spoke to the MD of this business, obviously I'm not going to name them, really sure. Great guy. And he was like, I said, surely this is the time. You've actually got some really pertinent offers and propositions that are really relevant right now. And he went, I totally understand. But, you know, it's a balance sheet decision. We've looked at the numbers. Whilst we can capitalize it, it's like the percentage likelihood of conversion is perceived to be lower. And therefore, we're going to stop. And he said, I might well come back to you the month after our notice ends, but I've been given an edict. And it's our financial director and accountant manages a business, isn't it?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. No, I know. I don't think anybody's been completely sort of immune to the whole to those kind of decisions. But on to sort of positive things, if we can. Briefly, could you just explain, not obviously to me because I know this, but how does Insight work? What kind of services do you provide?
So we do outsource sales and marketing for B2B technology and service providers, which means in real terms, we're a bit more of a complete service provider. So we do real hard cold-faced lead gen, getting right. something from nothing. But at the other end, we'll create quite sophisticated hero kind of white paper content, video content for brands looking to, you know, build wider engagement and fill funnel. We're reasonably unusual. Most of the time, you'll have a marketing partner who's delivering a relatively soft KPI, like a sign-up,
right.
but with quite sophisticated content and tactics. Or you'll have a pure lead gen partner who's trying to deliver a harder KPI, so for example, a meeting or a call, but they can often lack the sophistication in terms of the messaging development and the tactics. And I guess where we stand apart a bit is because I've got a team that, you know, work in inbound platforms like HubSpot and Marketo, really understand that content marketing piece of B2B.
Sure.
I've got another team that are very good at writing, you know, lead gen and demand gen campaigns and also getting on the phones and qualifying that interest. It gives us a slightly broader perspective. So, yeah, we're like an outsourced sales and marketing department for B2B services and technology providers.
Fantastic. And so what, Insight's what, about 10 years old now?
Yeah, it was 5 years ago when I was young. No, we've been going about 15 years.
Oh, 15, okay.
So it's been a while. We've got an office in Cape Town. We've diversified the business quite a lot. So
wow.
we've got a good, I don't know if you know, Cape Town, Woodstock is sort of where the agencies are, where the creative industry is. And that's really given us an interesting resource. So we've got a creative team over there and also access to data. And in the UK and London, that's where we've got the strategy and all the phone stuff comes out of London.
Fantastic. So, I mean, in total, how many people do you employ?
About 25.
Wow. Who's your favourite?
my business partner, of course.
It just changes.
Thanks for that. Yeah.
That's all right. Don't worry.
Whoever got the best deal in last.
So, I mean, you've been in new business in the industry since the very early days and notably in the sort of 2000s. And pretty much about the same time as me. So you obviously remember the early days of the business and you cut your teeth at RSW, which was one of the kind of first ever kind of new business agencies. Could you just quickly just paint a picture of what the business used to be like and how it's changed in the sort of last 20 years?
Yeah, so I didn't realize at the time, but I was very lucky to have worked both at Alchemist and then RSW, which at that time was the original outsourced new biz agency for agencies, and then the one that developed from that and grew bigger. The basic principle of those models at the time was get on the phone, normally ex-recruiters, good on the phone, put me a meeting, get the creative in the room, the client will love the work and they'll buy the work.
Right.
And so, they grew because it worked, right? That back in 2000, late 90s, there were fewer agencies. The clients were less governed by procurement. Mm-hmm. There was much more tactical activity. The clients had a better understanding of what they were buying. There were relatively fewer channels. Digital was less impactful.
Right.
And broadly, if you could get in front of someone, had a bit of rapport, could show some nice work, you might get a test.
Right. And that's, I mean, obviously things have changed sort of dramatically now. And I mean, even more so, I mean, given this kind of quarantine climate, I mean, has the last sort of couple of weeks, has this kind of informed your learning? Have you learned anything from this, from this kind of new way of working?
Yeah, I think I have, in truth. One, we don't need an office. it's pretty clear. But we, you know, you obviously, these kind of web-based meetings are great, but you, in Canada, you need that bonhomie.
Sure.
What have I learned? I've learned that, you know, where you work in a deal value that's a 6-7 figure deal value, might have a 1-3 year buying cycle, those deals are going to come in. So we, ironically, I mean, just so happens in the last 5 days, we've had two major automotive pitches come in for our clients. Now, my team have been working on those for months.
Right.
But, you know, they're like, well, we're at the end of a 3-year contract review for our supply panel. Here's the ITT, here's the invitation to tender. That is going ahead. So the clients are obviously like, well, I can't believe it. It's fantastic. On the other side of it, where you've got people doing more tactical activity, then if they're pivoting, then talking about things that may be more relevant contextually, we can create dialogue, but you can't just carry on as business as usual. So what have I learned from this so far? I mean, as I said at the beginning, it's quite personality led. So some people are going to just pull everything and batten down the hatches.
Right.
Other people are more bullish and want to trade through it. People with higher value products and services with longer buying cycles, those are less likely to be disrupted. I think this whole, the whole time is really from a communications perspective, you know. And there was a really interesting post on LinkedIn from one of the leaders of the PRCA, you know, the public relations, which I thought was fascinating. And it was a bit like, you know, consumers have got a long memory, and brands who don't behave well in this period will not be forgiven. And, you know, brands who do behave well will be loved and cherished. So if you contextualize Pret's behavior versus Virgin, There's going to be brand consequences through this period.
Did you find it weird that Coca-Cola announced that they were kind of stopping all activity?
I just, you know, again, I think it's really difficult. If you had to put a pin in a map now and go, okay, it's pretty predictable, people are going to do this and that. I mean, there are certain industries that are being decimated, as you'd expect, but then it's as much of the individual going. So I've, from a personal perspective, I've signed 3 new clients in the last 2 weeks. Fantastic. We've
well
had a lot
done.
Of, we've probably, thank you. We've probably had 5 clients go, we need to stop. You know, I've had 2 clients we'd agreed to sign and said, we don't want to start.
Right.
It's really difficult to say. I mean, I've got a client going, look, we've got a 9-month lead cycle. I need to fill my pipeline for Q3. Now's the time to be proactive.
Isn't that amazing?
And that's great.
Yeah.
Whereas we've got other clients going, we don't want to do anything at all until we get through this.
Till we can see what's at the other end. Yeah, yeah, I understand.
So it's as much personality as anything else.
And yeah, and kind of talking about the personality side of it. I mean, I noticed. I mean, your CV, you've got quite an education in the sort of creative arts side of things, which I found slightly unusual, I have to say. But I mean, is this useful when you're kind of dealing with agencies who are pretty much rooted in the sort of creative world?
Absolutely. I mean, at the age of 17, I realized that if I wanted to work in marketing services, the most important thing was to get a degree in etching. And that's really what led to that career move. So you can imagine coming out into the world of work with eyes blinking, having done a 3-year degree in etching, it was a bit of a surprise to find there wasn't a great deal of demand for that. So yeah, no, I don't know. I think the fact I've done an art degree probably allows me to have conversations with creatives where I basically just get jealous and wish I had their job. In real terms, if I wanted to work in the business I'm working in, look, the truth is I worked as a designer when I was younger, freelance, and I had a baby when I was very young.
Right.
And I thought, I better get a job. I applied for 10 sales jobs and 10 design jobs, and I got all the sales jobs and none of the design jobs. So that was the die was cast at that point, and I thought, well, I should probably probably stick to my knitting and give up on the creative. So that's effectively what happened.
I think that's how I got into it as well, was basically the sort of sales end came through before anything else. And I just thought, well, I'll just go for it, you know, because I was living in London at the time and needed to make the rent for the end of the month. So it was kind of driven by need more than anything. But I just wanted to go back to that dialogue we had last year, and just sort of recap for anybody listening. When I asked you to contribute to an editorial piece I was writing, and usually, like, if I send out a shout, you know, asking for some help, I sort of send out a few questions, get the answers back, and kind of then have to sort of string them into and sort of draw them out into a sort of 500 words. But when I sent you a bunch of questions, you came back, number one, ahead of deadline, and number two, with an absolute tome. I mean, unbelievable amount of information. And so I was sort of reading through it, and it was really detailed, personalized top to bottom explanation of the new business process. And it was way too much content for the actual article I was writing, but I knew it was gold. So now that we find ourselves in the midst of a set of totally unusual circumstances for the industry, and for most, except for like TV critics and mime artists or something, I mean, could you just impart some of that wisdom and advice for agency owners and new business managers stuck at home with ideas on how they could drum up some new business and some activity to lay the groundwork?
I mean, yeah, in fairness, you caught me on a rainy day sitting in prep, slightly over-caffeinated. Just at the time I was thinking, I should write this stuff down. And then your email arrived and I just thought, I'll write a type 5,000 words and just send it to Keith.
It was amazing.
No, it was a good look for me. I've done this for 20 years. I've done it from being in-house as a business director. I've worked for competitors.
Sure.
And I've worked for Insight for 15 years. So I suppose I'm in a reasonably unusual position, mostly because most of our competitors are clever enough to work on their businesses, not in their businesses. Whereas we're then our company, Christian and I, the two founders, we still work day to day with our clients. We advise them, we develop strategies, we work on propositions and messages. So it is a differentiator. And what we end up with is a fairly wide experience bank, just through having tried a bunch of stuff and seen what works and what doesn't work. So there are some really big, I mean, look, the biggest issue why agency BD often fails is because fundamentally the review cycle of effectiveness is disconnected from the purchase cycle. Now, just to say that in English, what that means is when an agency MD sits down for his weekly sales update and gets frustrated that there are no new pitches on the horizon, what he's forgetting, or she's forgetting, is that the typical buying cycle for high-value services like agency marketing services might be anything from 6 to 9 months. So if you're doing very high-frequency review every week, for example, but you're only really reviewing late-stage KPIs, so that's briefs and pitches, 9 times out of 10, the answer is, yeah, there's nothing this week, but I'm still talking to Coca-Cola, and that deal might come in June.
Yep.
But, you know, if you ask me every week, the answer is, yeah, no, I'm waiting. It's coming.
Right.
And I think that's the way to win business is to, and there's a lot of guff written about agency branding, typically, and this will sound cynical, written by people who aren't responsible for executing the ideas they generate and therefore not accountable for the success or failure of those plans, but that's probably a rant for another day. I would say what agencies also fail to understand is that client marketers are fairly disinterested in their DNA at the beginning of a process. So agencies typically communicate messages that are relatively generic and based on why they retain clients, because that's what they know. So they'll go, well, wow, what, how did we win that great pitch with Ford? Why are we retained globally by BP? And the answer to that will be, well, you know what, we're both creative, but also strategic, and we're just great guys. And the truth, that's why, that is why, that's the reason.
Right.
But they're very generic ideas, and they are why you maintain and grow a relationship, but they're not why you get the opportunity to start a relationship in the first place. And the new business process is it's kind of disconnected. It's a bit like the difference between an interview and a job. Clients are out there looking for really specific capabilities in agencies. So a client marketer might be like, oh yeah, I'm looking for an agency, you know, who does animation content for Instagram, targeting Gen Z based in, you know, ideally Luton, who's right. got really good experience in travel. And that's how they approach their Google searches. And the truth yeah. is, the agencies are sitting there going, look, we're creative. We've got Max. We understand how to create content. We've got good insight. We can pretty much do anything for anyone. Right. Whereas the brands are sitting there going, no, I need this guy out of Luton who just does Instagram content for travel.
Right.
Gen, you know, et cetera. And that's the mismatch. So the way to make agency BD more effective, I feel like at some point I should breathe. The way to make agency BD more effective is develop propositions that are kind of, you can market discreetly. So don't just go, we do marketing, because if you go, we do marketing, all of the brands go, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
We've got someone who does our marketing, thanks. So
right.
what you want to try and do is develop discrete propositions that are aligned either to unfulfilled demand, which is normally driven by innovations in technology or changes in audience behavior,
right.
like now, for example, that you can then market as a discrete service offering that doesn't cost $300,000 to buy, and then that allows you to foster a new commercial relationship quickly. And then you've got to recognize 80% of your new business income will come from farming, not hunting. So get over the line with a deal, get a deal in, sign up a client, and then do what you do really well.
So
account farm.
I get you. So kind of almost sell the thin end of the wedge in terms of, you know, it could have been, you know, I mean, you know, obviously we're looking at back in the day of like social media, or it would have been Instagram or influencer marketing or something else like that. Look at specificities and then, you know, sort of sell the wider business later. Is that what you're suggesting?
Pretty much. Exactly. Mm. I mean,
okay.
you really want, so you're basically just tracking and aligning to trends. So you're talking about AI, ML, TikTok.
Yep.
You're talking about anything that brand marketers are putting their head above the parapet to look at.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Well, I mean, one of the best questions I asked you in that list that I sent over was probably one of my best, so I'll ask it again. Quite often, and it pains me to say, new business managers are kind of dumped into the role with very little in the way of resource, and they're told to basically go out and get some new business, which inevitably results in, on a good day, the accumulation of a set of kind of random projects for an agency. I mean, is any new business good business, good new business, or and how do you help an agency define their new business market?
Yeah, it's kind of two questions there, aren't there, in
yep.
terms of the human and then the deliverable. I would say that I've worked with some dynamite, really, really good in-house agency BDs mm-hmm. in my life. And I've worked with some ineffective account people who've been moved sideways into agency BD roles. And it can be a board level trajectory where a good BD person can go straight to board.
Right.
And it can be a sideways move to exit. Unfortunately, because it's like, oh, you failed on these clearly defined KPIs.
Now we've got a reason to get rid of you.
Exactly, and it's hard, but you know, you know quite quickly when you meet the person which trajectory they're on. Because if you're a good in-house agency BD, you go BDM, biz dev director, commercial director, and then board.
Yep.
And it's a fast progression because there's less hierarchy than in the account side roles.
Right.
But at the same time, and people do have, you know, I've worked in-house, you can have really bad experiences in-house for the reasons I described earlier, because agency MDs are going, well, where are my pitches? It's week two.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. That's why working in a team that's specialist is easier. I mean, with regards to is any client a good client? Absolutely not.
Right.
Some clients are horrid, and, you know, no one wants a horrible client that doesn't pay you. I think that the basic mantra, fun, fame, fortune, is the kind of classic, isn't it? It's a reasonable kind of go-to. So if you're talking to somebody, go, look, if it's not one of these three things, or ideally two of them, then right. are we going to do it? And I think also the kind of clients people win reflects the way they market. So agencies that use more sophisticated inbound content-led, event-led marketing techniques attract people to them using pull.
Right.
They end up having a conversation with brands who perceive them as experts. So they'll be like, came to your event on next-gen AI stuff. Really fascinating. You're the guys for me. Can you help me with this project? Lovely. Great relationships. Charging a premium on the front foot.
Right.
Compared to, yeah, all right, come and see me. I've got 20 minutes. What, you want to do a creative free pitch for free? Yeah, okay, have a look at this then. See if you can fix this problem no one's been able to fix. Okay, you've come up with the idea. Well, I'll give you $2,000 for the idea. And I just think that, and people do that, right? People do,
right.
do that. And
yes.
there are very unscrupulous clients who are happy for agencies to do lots of work to educate them and work for free.
And it's so, never going to go anywhere.
Very rarely.
Yeah.
Very rarely. So you need to be, I do think that you need to be careful how you market.
Mm-hmm.
You need to support your in-house agency BD teams because they get absolutely kicked. I mean, if you look at networks, they can have a team of 500K headcount in their sales and marketing teams.
Right.
You know, it's a big departmental cost. Most agencies just don't invest enough in the function.
No, exactly. No, that's very true. But so now we're kind of getting into the meat of the chat. And are you okay to hang around just for a few minutes afterwards? We've got to cut for a commercial break, but we'd love to carry on. So we'll be right back after this advert, which we need to pay for some more toilet rolls.
Sounds good.
This show's made possible by the participation of Commercial Creative Systems, the first choice for London's creative community. Those that know the world of imaging are raving about the Canon ImagePress C710. Rather than viewing a copier as something to run prints from, Creative Systems sees it as a way to make you stand out from the crowd. This isn't only the highest quality professional laser device available, but it also has some fantastic capabilities, such as consistently accurate colour, print on and automatically duplex up to 350 GSM card, media flexibility, whether that's snakeskin, pearl effect or 1.3 metre banners, this device really does it all. And, oh no, if disaster strikes during a deadline-driven pitch, your machine will be fully calibrated, repaired, and up and running within 2 hours, 24/7, courtesy of your dedicated Creative Systems engineer. And we're back, talking with Alex Kirkpatrick, Managing Partner at Insight New Business. Alex is helping us wrap our heads around the new business process. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of expand upon is the idea of agencies having a sort of a holistic approach to new business, whereby the new business manager or director kind of engages the agency internally, and everybody at least starts thinking about winning new business in the agency. Is it good practice to make sure that everyone in the company plays a part in the new business process?
It absolutely is. I guess we'd call it a culture, wouldn't we? Creating a high performance shared culture.
Ah, you see, that's a great term. I should have used that.
This is the vision. I think you need. It's interesting. So when I worked in house, I worked for a PR firm that ended up getting bought by Engine, and I was the head of biz dev. And it was in PR, it's a slightly different structure to creative. So account directors sensibly run their own fiefdoms and have billing and P&L responsibility.
Right.
And I realized that the ADs, they were pretty clued up. They were speaking to journalists. They were getting good insights and leads. But there was a culture that said in our fortnightly revenue meeting, we're all the separate business line owners met with the MDs. Anyone who went, oh, I read this, we should talk to these guys, the answer would be, great idea, you should phone them up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if you want to facilitate a culture internally, you need to clearly define the roles and what's expected of people.
Right.
When agencies talk about BD, account directors and strategic leads, who are actually very valuable people, just go, I'm not getting on the phone, what are you talking about? So you need to... There are lots of things you can do. So nowadays, a modern BD strategy, you should have your leadership team, each with a defined business area that they're talking about and commenting and communicating about. They should have a task to create and share content through their social channels. More sophisticated companies should have HubSpot, where they're managing all those individual LinkedIn profiles centrally through the platform.
Mm-hmm.
You should certainly be creating a function where if people hear stuff, they can make a central BD team aware because they're going to be getting insights all the time.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there is a whole...
So not, different areas for different disciplines sort of thing.
It's just loads, you know. You should be... There's a function to create and share content. There's a function to be not proactive, but reactive to insights and the information you get from the market.
Right.
And then you'll find also, as an in-house BD, you'll find some of your account leads and some of your planners or whoever you're working with are just more interested. So it's much better to try and find who in your organization is interested in the process and work with them rather than trying to do a blanket initiative. Because if people don't want to do it, it's very hard to make them.
Yeah, they'll come up with 100 reasons why not. I've seen that happen as well. But is it a good thing generally to keep? I mean, because obviously you're on the agency side where nothing could happen one day and then day two, somebody phones you up and says, right, Alex, we need you to come in and do some work for us and stuff. And let's say, run it for 6 months and then sort of turn off the spigot again. I mean, is it a good thing to kind of stop and start the sort of new business effort so that once the bucket's full, turn it off? I mean, how do you keep your clients, or what advice do you give your clients about staying focused constantly on new business?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there is typically we tend to work with clients on the longer term. So we've tried to create terms that are easy to sign and easy to exit. So we work on one rolling month. And often we've got really clear horizons that we need to hit if you want to try and nick McKinsey's parlance. So broadly, we need to be in market and getting leads in week six. By month three, we want to be at commercial dialogue. By month six, we're looking for conversion. And then it becomes about long-term ROI. Yeah, the longer we work with people, the better it looks, obviously, because we're trying to get to money quickly and they're trying to account farm. So, I've worked with a client for 8 years. They attribute 7 figures every year and more to our activity. Now, that's nothing to do with me. That's because they've won clients and account fund them really well. And that's great. That's why they're a great agency. So the big issue with BD, it's all part of the same thing. It's short-term measurement against long-term buying cycles. Agencies that define clearly defined propositions that they can own that might be around particular expertise in marketing to an audience like mums, or might be about a particular service like, content for social channels that helps brands respond in a more agile way to the changing news agenda, which you can imagine is pretty topical right now. If they consistently talk about those things, and they're propositions, and they continue to create content and market them, they will build awareness and people will go, oh yeah, aren't they the guys that do that kind of quick social content thing, which is about the level of consideration any brand buyer has for an agency. They're not big on quoting agency philosophies or ideologies. They normally, most agencies get pinned down into, don't they do A and B?
Right.
If they communicate consistently, then as buyers enter buying cycles that can be anything from 3 months to 3 years, they will be on the agenda and they'll go, yeah, we'll get them. Let's get those guys in because I read their stuff. They look quite good. Now, who else should we talk to?
Right.
And consistent marketing delivers pipeline in the long term. That's the key.
Good. So, I mean, effectively, what you're saying is kind of is that the ongoing branding process for any agency is part of the new business effort anyway.
Yeah, I think it's important to sort of dissect that statement, if you like. So there's the brand idea, which agencies will spend an enormous amount of time working on, which can be disappear a bit into the fundament, if you like. And it's an issue. And then there's the proposition. So the brand idea, obviously, is the big idea they want to own. And then the proposition is a discrete service or areas of expertise that are backed up by case study.
Right.
The problem agencies have is, one, their brand idea, their ethos, their values become very important at the end of a pitch process, really important. Not that important at the beginning. So... Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the pitch process, marketers are looking for expertise to make sure they've got you in the right box. At the end of the pitch process, they're looking for values or, it needn't be a formal pitch. Also, I think because agencies often grow through recommendation and referral, they'll end up with some pretty eclectic clients. So they'll go, the thing about us, so I won't name them, but we worked with a leading PR firm in the past that repositioned as, they didn't want to talk about being PR, it was a bit old school. So they repositioned as the recommendation agency. Then people might remember who that was. Now, that's great, right? That's brilliant for the consumer team. That's for the recommendation agency. It's all about clicks and likes and driving engagement through social. It's absolutely spot on. Meanwhile, in the corporate team, which is what I was working for, I was like, how's that recommendation agency brand positioning working out for you guys? Mm-hmm. You probably want to be reputation agency, wouldn't you think? And they were like, yeah, it's a challenge. And I think that's a nice illustration of the hierarchy of messaging for brand. It's difficult to define really ownable, specific propositions at an agency brand level that aren't then immediately undermined when you start marketing your propositions in individual case studies.
Right. Okay. And the interesting thing, obviously, I mean, you know, that we touched on in an earlier conversation, but going back to the referral side of things, is that, you know, it's often good to have the two different streams. So you have your referral business, and then you also have your kind of pure new business, which is sort of almost dictating the new direction that the agency can go in.
It's really important, and it's a perennial conversation with MDs, which is, well, I get more just come walking in the door than we get from cold.
You sure?
Which is true. I mean, those networks will die out. You know, there's a journey. So people have periods in their lives, like genuinely, you know, if you have a kid and join NCT, your network expands. And I've seen clients win 7-figure accounts just because their personal network's expanded.
Yeah.
Also, and it's hard to hear, but you get too old. So suddenly your referring client gets promoted into a director level from their brand group, and they're no longer in a commissioning role.
Right.
And suddenly all your contacts are too senior to buy anything.
Yeah.
They're obviously referring you to the marketer that's coming underneath them, but they've got their own network. So
sure.
just relying on referral. Also, when you rely on just referral BD, you lose control of your brand. So, you know, let's say we work with Jerry over at GSK. Jerry loves us. He's been with us for 20 years. Back then, we just did a lot of PowerPoint. But now, obviously, we're a next-gen integrated content strategy business. But unfortunately, whenever Jerry refers us, he goes, yeah, they're great at PowerPoint. So our brand is owned by that referring partner. So it's important for agencies to take control of their own destiny, if you like, from a BD perspective.
That's fantastic. No, that's a very good point. And we come across that a lot in the world of BD, is that, you know, we don't need real sales because our sales happen organically because people refer us. And the response to that is always, well, you know, you can end up living in an echo chamber and you know, you're really only ever one phone call away from that whole thing collapsing on you.
Yeah, it's a factor.
But so this is some great information and fantastic to finally squeeze some juice out of you. But I know a while back you mentioned committing some of this to a help some of this information into a book. I mean, any plans to get cracking on it? Now you're in quarantine, of course.
I've been investing a lot of time in my nappy changing techniques. I'm doing a lot of cleaning permanent marker off walls.
Fantastic.
The book, I mean, I'd love to do a big brain dump of everything. It's interesting. I mean, things change relatively fast.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm thinking about doing is just maybe doing some kind of recorded, so I can use my advanced drawing skills. So doing some doing some diagrams and maybe just narrating to those diagrams, because I've done a lot of training, everything from cold calling to pitching to proposition development. There's a lot of IP. So yeah, I think eventually and ultimately I'm keen to sort of document some of this brain noise into a format that people can use, but
maybe
a
vlog or a vlog or something.
Yeah, a vlog, something like that. A vlog. Yeah. I'm not sure either of us know how to say that, but something like that. Yeah, I don't know. I think what I'll probably do, I've checked, and on the iPad you can draw and speak at the same time. So I'll probably just do some drawings and animate and speak to the drawings.
Like Rolf Harris.
Exactly, but not obviously paedophile.
Oh, you went there. You went there. Okay.
Apart from that, yeah. It's almost exactly like Rolf Harris, not with the wobble boards or that.
Fantastic. Or the didgeridoo. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. But
thanks for the reference.
Though. That's okay. That's okay. That you now know that's going to be for, forever with you now. Yes, you'll always have that. But I mean, onto kind of more sort of slightly lighter aspects of life. I mean, you've got a young family, but I take it you don't get much personal kind of Alex time. So what do you do? I mean, what do you have any hobbies? Do you pursue? Are you like a race car driver or something?
So, yeah, absolutely. Being 6 foot seven, I'm all about the race car. And
God, you're tall. Why is everybody in new business tall?
I think it's just that they wouldn't accept us anywhere else. what do I do in my spare time? I cycle. I love a cycle. So I'm very lucky. Yes. I live in just outside Richmond, and the office is in Kingston.
Right.
My daily commute is through Richmond Park, which I really value and appreciate. So I do a bit of that. I do a bit of, I'll occasionally draw something just for fun. And then, I'd like to say, I listen to Audible a lot.
Oh, okay. Okay. You're a book listener, business or a fiction?
I like history. I listen to quite a lot of history. So I'm listening to The Silk Road right now, which is just 24 hours of content to churn through. It should be good.
Have you listened to Stephen Fry's podcast about his history podcast? It's very, very engaging.
He does the one around the Victorian stuff, which I thought was hilarious. But yeah, no, he's brilliant. Brilliant. I love him.
Yeah. Very good. So look, this is the point in the show when I let guests have their own kind of little commercial and tell us what they're up to or what they hope to be in the near future, apart from wiping crayon off the walls and stuff. So if anyone listening to this likes the cut of your jib and what they hear, et cetera, and want to find out a little bit more, how do they find you and what are you up to?
Insight, INCITE, gotcha. New, NEW. business.co.uk. So www.insite.newbusiness.co.uk. Have a look at the website. Just drop us a note. Look at some of the content. We've got a fair few white papers on there. And just email us and we'll be happy to talk stuff through.
That's great. That's great. Well, look, I hope this is the start of many conversations that we have in the podcast space. I think we could all learn a lot from you and make ourselves a lot better at the whole new business effort. But thanks very much for spending time with us. And I hope the world snaps back to normal soon and we can catch up with you again. So all the best to you, Alex. Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure. And thanks so much for asking me on. I'm grateful. And it's nice to be able to just burble on for a bit. So thank you.
No problem. Take care, Alex. So that was Alex's take on the world of new business, and what a lovely set of tips. I always enjoy chatting with Alex because I know he's very well regarded and one of the industry's leading authorities on sales and sales pipeline building. If you need advice with your sales, always make sure that it comes from a good, reliable source, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a more informative and well-rounded individual than Alex. So there you have it, the end of episode 4 already, and we haven't even started to scratch the surface of how you can make your agency a better place to be when it's purring with the best grade new business fuel you can put in it. So join me next time when we light the wick of our new business lantern and spotlight some great methods that you can use to help grow your new business campaigns. I'd like to thank my guest Alex Kirkpatrick, my co-producer and wife Donna, our IT wizard and friend Matt Smith at Queegee Bow Design, and of course the ever-present Peter Banks for the music. See you next time around on the Fuel Podcast.